This conference will now be recorded.
Can I get a vote? What do we have to say? Oh, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. I know we only do this once a year. Don't we re-vote these in, by the way, actually, coming up pretty soon? Anyway, so we have a special guest today, Barbara Bruno, who was our Springdale mayor. She's going to present on the Zion National Park Life Ambassador Program. So if we could just give her some minutes.
Okay, so I hope you can all hear me. Let me know if not. So I think I want to start with the problem that we were trying to solve when I say we. Zion National Park is actually the owner of the program. But obviously what happens in Zion happens in Springdale. So the problem is that we used to have two bike shops. They not only rented serious mountain bikes, but they would let their own clients choose to go on their guided tours, and then one rented bicycles. So if you were a bicyclist and you wanted to go to Zion, you might rent one of their bikes and go in. But in July 2017, the bike shop got e-bikes, and it kind of changed everything. And then in early 2020, when COVID hit, and they started requiring reservations for shuttles, the best way to go into the park was an e-bike, and it's still actually the best way to go into the park. So during COVID, Zion National Park reported that there were times up at the Temple of Sinawava, which is the last stop, there were almost 600 e-bikes at any one time parked there, because that's what people were doing to go in. And then the problem was exacerbated by the fact that a lot of private shuttles were allowed to go in during COVID when reservations were required. So people were paying $100 a ride to go into the park. And so you had e-bikes and you had traffic, and a lot of people on the e-bikes didn't know the rules. When a shuttle comes up behind you at Zion National Park, you were supposed to stop the bike and get off and let the bus go by. So people who aren't familiar with those rules don't do that, and all of a sudden the buses are stopped and it's just chaotic. So that was part of the problem. The other problem that maybe isn't a problem, but renting e-bikes is really a lucrative business. So we suddenly had all these e-bike rental shops popping up. We had people renting e-bikes out of their homes. There was actually one apartment where they were renting e-bikes. And so we had to change our ordinance for home occupancy, because they had them all over in the yard and the people were coming and going all day. So now our home occupancy says that there can be no outdoor storage or equipment in your home occupancy. It has to happen inside, and there's no rental of equipment. So, and no more than five visits that come and go per day. So these are all things you'll want to think about if you decide, you know, I know some communities like Santa Clara is getting an abundance of e-bikes too. So the other thing that was unforeseen for Springdale was that all the hotels that had retail spaces were renting their retail spaces to e-bike rentals. And all of a sudden, people who were reserving e-bikes and coming to get their e-bikes at the hotels were parking at the hotels. And there was no parking for an overnight guest, which, if you're renting a room for $400 a night and you can't park, it doesn't go over so well. So some of the hoteliers even kicked the e-bike rental shops out of their properties because it was parking for them. Another thing that was going on is that people were renting bikes for the whole day. They were paying about $100 a day, so you can see why it's so lucrative. Very little overhead. So when they were done in Zion National Park, they were riding around town, and they were using our trails, including the multi-use trails and the off-leash dog trails, which they certainly have the right to do, but our dog owners were getting very upset. They're still upset. So, and then the other thing that happened is that in May of 23, the state of Utah passed a law saying that mobile businesses must be allowed. So that increased the number of e-bikes, and it caused what I consider to be an unfair advantage of someone who loaded a trailer with e-bikes and brought them into town, competing with brick and mortar stores who were in the community paying taxes, because the mobile businesses pay taxes in their base city. They don't pay taxes in their mobile city. So another thing to think about. We don't allow any mobile businesses in residential zones. And so we had to revise our mobile business ordinance to require that it be on private property, and there can only be one per property. So if one of the hotels wants to let a trailer come in and rent bikes out of there, we can't stop that. The state won't let us stop it, but we can say there can only be one. So people who are not familiar with e-bikes, or bikes sometimes at all, you know, people haven't ridden a bike in years if ever, we're getting on these e-bikes at the shops and going right out into traffic. It's amazing. There was a woman who got on an e-bike and pedaled and it went, and she went across the street, busy day, across the street, crashed into an outdoor display at the store across the street and didn't get hurt. But that's the kind of stuff that was going on. So we also changed an ordinance, and now we require a physical barrier. It can be a hedge, it can be a fence or something, but from where they get their bikes to the public right of way. So that's something else you want to think about. And we even have asked our bike shops to set up a practice area where people can get on the bike and ride around safely and learn how to use it before they go out into traffic. We did look into not issuing any more business licenses for e-bike rentals, and our attorney gave us a ruling that said that we can't do that, that we have to allow, we can't decide what businesses can come and go. So that was the problem that we were trying to solve. So Zion National Park, working with Springdale, set up what we call a bike ambassador program. Again, it's a program that's administered by Zion National Park, but we have residents of Springdale who are the bike ambassadors. So it's run by Amanda Rowland at the park, if you know her. The program is not meant to be punitive. Instead, these people are meant to be helpful. They're meant to ride the Peyrus Trail, which is the only trail where bikes are allowed, right in the road. And if they see somebody doing something like not stopping for a shuttle or something like that, they go up to them, they're wearing a t-shirt that says they're a volunteer, and they talk to them about the rules of the road. They count the bikes in the park, and the reason for that is that the park wants to provide bike racks, and they can't really provide enough bike racks for 600 bikes. And most e-bikes have kickstands, but it's a lot easier to secure your bike if you have a bike rack to lock it up to. So they try to provide as many as they can for sort of an average load of bikes in the park. Our bike ambassadors also work with the bike shops to help them understand their responsibility to their renters. So I talked about a practice area. I talked about the entrance to public right-of-ways. Simple, stupid thing. A lot of the people going up into the park are like the Narrows, and they have those long sticks. You've got to tell them not to have them across the bike when they go up the Peyrus Trail. Honestly, people would have the bikes vertically or horizontally across their bikes, and they take people out. So they would teach them to have the bikes vertical instead of horizontal. Tell them they have to wear a helmet. Tell them they have to stop for the shuttles, that kind of thing. So the bike ambassadors also encourage our bike shops to only rent the type of e-bikes that are allowed in Zion National Park, which is a class one. So think about this if you have a program. Class one is a pedal assist only, and max speed is 20 miles an hour. That's what's allowed in the park. Class two is pedal or throttle, and the max speed is also 20. But there's a class three pedal assist bike that'll go up to 28. So in Zion National Park, they've made a decision that it's only that class one. And the motor can be no bigger than 1 horsepower or 750 watts. So the ambassadors also have two-way radios, and there are occasions where they run into medical situations and they call for help. So they're especially helpful too when a ranger's not around and something happens in the park. But again, it's not punitive. We actually talked about giving them authority to write tickets when the program first started, and made a decision not to do that. So it's working out really well. They take the winters off because it's not as busy, but their shuttle started running last Sunday and the bike ambassadors are out again. Again, it's a volunteer position, but it is administered by Zion National Park. So I sent Myron sort of a write-up that I had sent to Mayor Hart talking about the program, talking about, you know, the reason we have it. Obviously, it's crowd management and shuttle line relief and that kind of thing. And then at the end of that, it talks about some of the details around the program. Also brought a copy of our mobile business ordinance and our bicycle open air display. So anything that might be helpful to you if you decide to start a program like this, I'm happy to help you with. Or if you know Amanda at the park, they're pretty short staffed these days. They always were, but now it's worse. So I can help you with that, or we can talk with her if you can get a minute.
Zion National Park started counting foot traffic, bicycle traffic, and shuttle traffic several years ago.
Right.
Do you have, or do you think that the data is available from those counts? Because that could be beneficial to our MPO travel map model.
I believe they would have that information. I could check with them and find out. How many years back are you interested in going?
Well, you said that the e-bikes started showing up in 2017.
Uh-huh. I'm gonna go back to that.
So I'd like some data from 2017 forward.
Okay, I will see what I can do.
If.
So you're talking about the number of bikes, not the visitation, because that number is readily available.
Yeah, I have visitation data.
Okay.
I don't have mode of transportation for visitors, and I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
Even if you could just give me a contact of who to talk to, if that data would be helpful.
Okay.
And the other question, on your ambassador program, where do you go to get the volunteers? And how big is the volunteer force for your ambassadors?
In Springdale, we're a small community, so it's pretty easy to you know, just send an email blast out or put in our newsletter that we're looking, that this park is looking for volunteers and people step up. And I believe they have about a dozen volunteers at any given time. And I think at any given time, there are two or three that are in the park. And it's a pretty flexible program. If you want to go today, you can. If you don't, that's okay too. But there's usually about two or three a day.
Okay. You said that you talked about giving them the ability to rent tickets, but decided not to. So what were some of the thought processes behind that decision?
We didn't want the program to be punitive. We really wanted it to be more of a visitor service and sort of like, hey, glad you're here. I'm glad you're riding that bike, but you know, you may want to think about that. I mean, it's not clear that any volunteer citizen would have the ability to write a ticket anyway, but that wouldn't be challenged legally. But ultimately, the decision was that we get one attorney to something like that. You know, you go to your favorite national park and then write me a ticket for writing a bike.
Yeah. I was just curious because there was a lot of discussion when we were doing our trail standards for Washington County about the lack of enforcement and the rules ever going to be followed if there's not enforcement. Now the police department's kind of said we don't have the ability to enforce them, so I was wondering if that would be an option. It sounds like
we don't think it is, and and at Zion usually it's ignorance of rules and laws rather than, you know, willful, but that doesn't mean that never happens. I think that the rangers, though, I mean, I suppose a bike ambassador, if someone were really doing something pretty egregious, they could call a ranger, and the ranger could certainly write a ticket.
Talk of putting a paved path up through Zion, is that, do you know where that's at, or?
Yeah, that's waiting for some more money. So they're going to extend, that's the Payroos Trail, which is the only trail that allows pedestrians and bikes and dogs. And they got a price estimate originally of $18 million. While they're doing that trail, they want to extend the sewer up too.
Right.
And now it's about three times that. So they've got a lot of the money, but they're trying to raise a little bit more. Zion Forever is having fundraisers, and they're going, the state has pitched in some money too. They're just trying to get to where they have enough to start it.
Oh, I'm sure
it'll be next year.
I'm sure they'd allow the county to make a contribution to that program.
Yeah, our commissioners actually went to that to get the state money. So
they did. Yeah. They got to make.
We've been involved in it. We're very interested in utilization of the park and making it a pleasant experience for everybody to be there. So.
Any other questions for Barbara? Well, thank you for coming and teaching us about that. I didn't know it was that existing. So.
You're welcome. And if you'll excuse me, I'm going to head back up to Springfield
thank
for
you.
Another meeting.
Thank you. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Nice seeing all of you.
Next on the list is our functional class role program update. Nick's going to present on that.
Most of y'all were involved in conversations a little while ago with FHWA and UDOT about updating a lot of the functional classifications within our region and other regions in the state. Before, what was being discussed was the urban area boundaries and a lot of the projected urban populations within each region. And that has now, those conversations have now been completed, accepted, and all of the functional classifications in that way has been adopted by FHWA and UDOT. Now we're going to be starting up conversations with roadway classifications. There will be an interactive web map that will be going out here pretty soon, and we'll be working with all the individual communities again to talk about roadways that go through your areas that may have potentially warranted some change in classification, being whether it went from a local road to a minor or major arterial. So we'll be talking about that, or if anything might have warranted a drop in classifications. Those will be coming up here pretty soon. We'll be going with we'll be talking with the same people we did previously with Kelly Lund and Benjamin Mom, who have been driving those conversations. And that'll be coming up when you think they wanted to start those discussions.
Within the month.
Within the month.
I think they wanted all the comments back by sometime in April. So.
Yeah.
Does that include the rural areas this time then? Or?
Yeah, that'll include the rural areas as well. Chris will be a part of those conversations as well.
Is it still a no net gain, or you add one, you can't take one off kind of thing? Or?
No, we want a good balance of functional classifications. We don't want too many of one type. We really want to look at and say, let's make sure that they're just slowly building up to those larger little classifications. And so I think that's what just needs to be looked at, to say, do you have too many of one, do you need to get rid of some? And it's not a set, you have to get rid of one if you add one or change your functional classification, because with population growth, some of those roads are going to have to be elevated to handle all the additional traffic. So, you know, the areas of the state is huge to look at to try and do this. So if everybody could look within their own jurisdiction and say, based on our transportation master plan, are there some things that need to be changed with functional classification, and compare the master plan and what they're to the state's functional classification. Sometimes they're very different. The state reports its federal highways, but the local jurisdiction will change their functional classification for their uses to whatever they want. If it doesn't get coordinated back to UDOT and federal highways, then our maps are different. So it would be great to just do a quick double check, let us know if there's any discrepancies, and just where we need to adjust that map. So. Okay.
You got anything else to add to that?
Not my fellowship,
Mike. Okay. I'm going to be reaching out to everyone soon about the starting those conversations.
So I was just going to say that Hurricane City never had anyone come and talk to us about any updates. I thought someone from UDOT was going to be talking to us.
We need to, we'll look into fixing that.
I don't think St. George City has had that either.
Well, yeah, we talked to
oh, did you guys?
Cameron and Jay, I think you came to those conversations as well.
Mm-hmm. And if I forgot, then please forgive me. But I think I would remember if we did. It seemed like there was some guy from UDOT that was supposed to be
Ben is the one that usually reaches out. I've been trying to be a little bit more involved and help him, because I think if you look at that, he's over the whole state. So trying to think of just for the MPO area, that's a lot of people to contact. Then you add every county, every MPO.
Yeah.
And he's got 3 or 4 months on some of those things to do it. So it's very possible that he'd get reached out to. The MPO areas, they try to coordinate with Myron and Nick to say, can you help us get this information? So it may have been a conversation in here to take a look at it, and it did never get followed up with an individual meeting. But I guess, and that's maybe the case here too with functional classifications. We hope to get to everybody, but that's why we'll bring it up here. So if you can just take a look at it, let us know if there's any functional classification changes you'd like to make in any local area.
Okay. Yeah, and we did give him, he does have everyone's contact information, who's on, who are affiliated with DTAC or DTEC. So that they should reach out just with some basic information. But we'll make sure that meetings get set.
We'll follow up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
So that's going to come from the state or from you? We're going to get an email. That's
probably both. They hold the contact list of everyone who should be involved. But they work with us to.
You'll just send us a link to that map.
The map should be. I just tried walking into it. It's still not accessible just yet. But they said they should be working to get that access to everyone fairly soon. So we should be getting that within the next week or two.
All right, thank you very much, Nick. And it's me now, I guess. So this is our ITS project funding request. So I was looking at our ATMS data to look at signals that we have in our MPO. We have about 124 traffic signals within our MPO, and 69 of those are within St. George alone. Six that we have in design right now. So we're got quite a lot of traffic signals here in our city. Some of the equipment that we have out in the field, though, is becoming very old. We've got some switches and cabinets within our MPO that are 15 years and older. And if I were to hand you a cell phone from 15 years ago, you probably wouldn't be using it. So, or you'd have a difficult time using it. Unless your Nicky still uses the iPhone 1, I think.
It's a 7.
No, it's a 7. So it's pretty old. That's 10 years old, so. But anyway, so we have some equipment needs out there. We've reached out to Pine Top to give us some estimates within St. George and Washington. And we're going to start upgrading some of our equipment as we move into the new traffic control center. Some of our switches that we have out there are 15, 20 years old, and we'd like to upgrade 42, it looks like, is what we've looked at. Some CCTV installations in Washington and St. George City. And then the actual switches, which is the third item there for 74, that's the labor to install. It was going to take about a couple weeks to do that. And then we've got some CCTV cameras for St. George and Washington City. And traffic signal cams. We've got some traffic, the signal cams that are out in the field, the connectors become brittle. And so them being 15 years old, we need to get some of those replaced. As we move into the traffic control center, I don't have an exact need for what's going to be in there. I just kind of made an estimate of $20,000 of new equipment that will need to be housed within that new traffic control center and computers and things like that. So I just made an estimate with that. And then we have two cameras that we're going to install, St. George City's going to install. And then Ivan's, they've requested some automatic traffic recorders. And that is the 49,000 item 11. That is to set up some three traffic recorders in Ivan City that would give 24/7, 365 volumes to Ivan's and to UDOT. Those will be handled on UDOT 6. UDOT will be housing that in their server. The data will be coming from the hardware in the field. So, anyways, the total request that we have for all of this is $314,957.70. Any questions that anybody had about any of the equipment or the dollar amount, anything?
I was going to ask the three traffic recorders, why just Ivan's? Because I think I was asking about some continuous gas stations and those in other places in the state. And I got back from our central group that there's a lot of places in the MPO area that they want to put down. Mm-hmm. They're not state roads because they said that they need to report traffic data to federal highways to try and show that. So I was wondering, is there some funds to help get some of those locations inside the MPO areas that are not state roads to get that data?
If there's some need out there, I didn't know that there was that need.
Okay.
But we could definitely use this funding for that. I mean, that's what the funding is for. For traffic counts, we just use our Wavetronics radar out in the ATMS data for our traffic counts. And then
so you just use the stuff that's already at the signals?
Yeah. But anything above and beyond, I mean, I don't know if we
really looked into that.
Have you found any problems with reliability on that, with South Dakota traffic?
I know that, you know, there was a study done by Summit Traffic, and they looked at, they did a study at BYU, and that's part of the problem. Anyways.
High quality.
Anyway, they looked at different scenarios, and depending on how many lanes there are, the speed of the vehicle, where they are located, there's some discrepancy, so it's not 100% accurate.
Okay.
But they claim it's 90%, which, you know, I think for planning purposes, is pretty good.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you need the high level information, you can use their called HDs, the old equipment. Now they're switching to a different radar.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little more sensitive. But yeah, I mean, we could do that. If the need is there to install those in St. George City or in the other communities, we can definitely look at that.
Yeah, I'll get you a list of all the ones that were recommended.
Okay.
That are not on state roads inside the metro areas to say this is what we've recommended that UDOT's trying to get funding for, but we're struggling to get funding for any of them. And my comment was is we really should be focused our funding on state routes first because we're missing a lot of information on state routes before we go there. So if there's any funding the MPO can help with to get those.
Absolutely. If you could get us an estimate, I mean, we could add it to this. And Myron, why don't you kind of let us know how much is in that fund? I think you have your spreadsheet.
That's item number E on the agenda. We can look at that.
Oh, I'm skipping, sorry.
But, you know, really briefly, with the ITS program, we program $150,000 to ITS upgrades every year. We have not, we have spent $20,000 from fiscal year 2024's money. But we have the 2024, the rest of the 2024 money, the 2025 money, and we could program the 25. But $150,000 per year plus the 6% match gets to that 314 number that's on the board right now, of available funding right now. Looking forward, the 2026 monies would come available in October. So we can program those.
Yeah, I don't think it's like something that is critical that has to be done now, but it's a need that if I give it to you, Monty, and then you can maybe put it on for next year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just consider it.
Yeah, if we have those locations that need to have that kind of counts, you know, I think the only ATRs we have are one on Red Coast Drive and then on Bluff Street and then one on Sunset. I think those are the only three that we have. But if we need more that are, you know, on state roads, let's have that information for next year. But I kind of did some estimates based on the equipment. At today's cost, it's about $10,000 per station. That's kind of a rough estimate, including installation.
But most of those, you'd already have traffic lights at that you can get the estimates that way? Is that what you're
saying? You can get a good estimate if they're at a traffic signal.
So it'd just be ones that don't have traffic signals?
Yeah. You know.
And I can't remember where all of them were, but when we're putting them on a state system, we try to get them close to a traffic signal so we know there's fiber and power there.
Mm-hmm.
But we still want them several hundred feet away so we don't have the issue with having it. The signal backups passes over the count station because
it's better
data if it's free flow traffic other than stop and go. So,
yep.
Not always fiber there.
There's not always fiber there. Yeah, I mean, there's other ways.
To UDOT signals, they're usually as fiber, but not always. Yes.
So, these ones for Ivans are going to require cell modem data. And we have two traffic signals that run on cell data, but it's okay. It's not bad. It's pretty good data.
Do we know where those are located? Is one on Old Highway 91 or are they both?
Chuck asked for one on 91, one on Snow Canyon Parkway as you come into town, and then the other one I do believe is on Main Street,
Center Street,
Main Street. Do we know those locations? So, I guess
On the 12 traffic signal cabinet?
Yeah, two of those are yours.
Okay.
Yes, two of those were to Washington City. That you don't even want to stick your hands in there. So they've got some really old ones that you just don't even want to look at. They'll electrocute you, so.
Okay.
from a couple of them, so go for it. So anyway, I guess we need to make a motion.
So we need a motion from this body to recommend the DTEC spend these funds on these projects. We also need an idea of how many PIN numbers from UDOT we need. So is this one project that's got multiple parts to it, or
is it divided into different? That's probably how I would do it, just as one PIN.
Okay.
See if we can best way to manage it.
And we would need an idea on the match monies, where the match money's coming from.
Okay, we'll get to St. George City to figure that out. Because some of these will be Washington City, some will be St. George, so we'll have to figure those out.
Okay.
Your comments kind of were almost a motion, so.
I'm not a voting member.
I know, it was really close, so I'm gonna kind of pair Myron's comment into a motion and recommend approval.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. All right, our next item of business is our active transportation data collection updates, and Nick will be presenting on that.
UDOT is leading an effort to try to update all active transportation data within the state, and it's mainly starting out with trying to figure out what the existing conditions are on the roads today. That's the first step. There'll be some planning aspects to it that will be coming later. That's mainly already finished through our last transportation plan update. What we're gonna be trying to do coming up here is reaching out to individual cities. We recently just updated, the MPO specifically just updated our data set with existing active transportation facilities up to, I want to say, 2023. So we have a pretty extensive data set already with existing conditions. What we'll be going to do next is reaching out to y'all and working with you to try to make sure that data is, one, accurate, and two, trying to get some more additional information. We're going to be looking to see what facility types are in your areas, what plans you have for the future of those facility types. And I should also mention that this is mainly going to be talking about on-street facilities or facilities that aren't multi-use paved trails. Those are the type of facilities that UDOT is kind of looking specifically at to make sure that it's updated to the extent that it is, and then trying to make sure that we have a system in place that keeps track of those facilities as we move forward. This is an effort led by Stephanie Tomlin and her team. This isn't going to be a Utah Trail Network thing. This is just going to be trying to keep a maintained data set by UGRC for going forward. If you already have updated active transportation GIS data, that would be fantastic to get that from y'all. That is the most up-to-date. And we can just piggyback off of that. We'll still work on meeting with you with your individual areas to make sure that that's all good with you, but we just want to make sure that we're creating some type of standardization process through the MPO's data set to make sure that everything is as up to date as possible. This will also include sidewalk data or anything like that for pedestrian level traffic. Yeah, so that'll be coming up here pretty soon. If you have any questions, our data scientist, Radhika, she couldn't be here today, she's out of town. She'll be the one maintaining that data set moving forward, and she'll be reaching out to, she and I will both be reaching out to you folks pretty soon.
It's not gonna be utilization, traffic, or trail counts or anything like that?
No, it's not trail counts.
Just facilities.
Yeah, just facilities and facilities. Yeah. Facility types, that type of data. Well, yeah, we know that there's a...
It's just paved and concrete, we're not looking at dirt.
Yeah, if it's designated as a actual active transportation or pedestrian facility type, that's what we're looking for. It also, say you have shoulder widths that could look like a bike lane or be utilized as a bike lane, unless it's specifically designated as a bike lane, that's the type of information that we're looking for. Or if you have plans for future things, that'll help also our active transportation plan as well, moving forward.
We don't even have pavement width for cars, let alone bikes.
Yeah.
Like,
so
will this include private facilities that are open to the public?
That's a good question. I haven't asked about that specifically. I think this is mainly for public facilities. So private facilities, I have to ask about that.
Yeah, we have some like down Desert Color, one of the hospital homes.
Yeah.
That are open to the public, but we just don't maintain them.
Yeah.
Long roads.
That's a good, yeah. I'll shoot that question back to Stephanie and see what she says. This will also help our unified plan processes as well. So that'll also be in conversations.
Any other questions for Nick? All right, let's move on to item E, funding updates, TIP review, and vote sharing. Myron.
Okay, I'm going to refer to the numbers that are on this sheet here. I've projected them up on the board, maybe. Did I?
There you go.
Is that it? Or did I need to do this?
I think that just shows what you're sharing.
All right. All right, so I've gone through and updated our TIP according to what our EPM numbers are coming back. There were a couple of little changes in there that have affected some of the projects, some of the MPO projects, and I've communicated with those overall. But as you look through this sheet, that there are still some fixes that need to happen that are highlighted in orange that haven't actually happened yet. But as we look through these numbers, I'm particularly focused on the local projects down here without PIN numbers. These are St. George City projects, some Hurricane, some Washington, a couple of Santa Clara projects down there. I would ask that those of you here that have jurisdiction over projects that are on our long-range plan, if you would look and make sure that this list is complete as to what may be funded within the next 5 years, so that when we get to our public comment period in June and July, that we have a complete list. So that's task one. The other thing that I wanted to note on this update of this TIP list is that we updated our revenue apportionments in this line here, which has given us a bigger balance than we anticipated. We've got $966,000 worth of funding that we did not program yet, that could be programmed in our small urban funds. My recommendation is that we let that sit until our October processes and program it at that point, unless there's a burning need to program some funding in 2029 at this point. It's still far enough in the future
that we should just let it sit.
But anyway, those two items have come up with this update. So I've updated all of the projects with a PIN number that are on the UDOT side of things. And we've completed that review, but I have yet to review the local projects in there, and would ask that you guys look at those, particularly in St. George, Washington, and Hurricane. And with that, I wanted to talk about the ITS fund. at the very top, we've reserved these ITS funds for 2025 through 2028. It's like I need to put $150,000 in that spot there. But anyway, we've just put that PIN number as a to be determined at a later date. And this motion that we made today for funding those ITS projects will go in there. Again, we have about $130,000 in 2024 funds that we have not yet obligated that we would be able to put toward that. And plus this 150. So we should be good with that. And then again, Chris, in future years, we've got those levels of funding for ITS upgrades in the area. We like them to benefit the locals, roads projects as much as we can because that's rich and they've got.
There's probably one on here that should be, I think now, in that Sheep Ridge Road. Now that we took Virgin into the MPO, correct?
Yes.
Including that, that probably should be added to this list. We got some federal funding for it. So is it there? There she goes. Okay, thanks. Didn't see it when I was looking through.
What PIN number is that?
21935. That looks correct on the dollar amount.
So this one here. Thanks, Todd. That's all I have for you today. We seem to be in good shape looking for those last updates.
All right. Is that everything? Oh, did you want to talk about our vote share review?
Oh yeah, sorry about that. We talked about our vote share a year ago when we set it at 6,000 per share. And then when I sent the bills out, I only billed at 5,500 a share. So for that, I'm sorry.
We get a discount?
You already received your discount this year. We will not make that mistake next year when we do our vote share. So as you come into your budget seasons, the vote share next year will be 6,000 per share. St. George gets 3 shares, so you're that. Most everybody else has got 1 share. Okay. Laverkin, Tocqueville, Leeds, and Virgin pay a 1/3 vote share each.
All right. Is that all we have, Myron?
That's all I have.
All right, let's get into our local project status updates, starting with Hurricane.
We have our slurry and chip pavement maintenance projects coming up in the next few months. Our 100 North reconstruction project is underway. Other than that, it's just a lot of development.
All right. Chuck's not here. Jay has to leave. He's got another meeting, so I guess I got a couple for him. Ivan, Chuck's not here, so Tom gets to take his place.
Our Highway 91 Phase 2 from the Boston up to our city boundary should be starting either the end of this month or early April. JP Excavating's doing that project. We're also doing some pavement maintenance stuff. We just finished up crack seal and yeah, I think that's about all.
Is the hump permanent in the roundabout yet?
Not permanent yet, but soon to be.
It's getting there. Right?
Much to many chagrin.
Laverkin? Nobody at Laverkin anyways. Leeds? Nobody from Leeds? St. George? Well, we're just hitting into budget season, so we've got a lot of projects there. Like I mentioned, we've got 6 signals that we're in design on. Nick was curious about the new Costco that's going in at exit, I guess it would be the, it's not exit 2-ish,
So as you, it's the off-ramp as you get, what is the name of the paparazzi? It's next to that building, next to the Moto Zoo.
Is that exit one on Southern Parkway?
I think so. Exit one.
Exit two on I-15, exit one on Southern Parkway.
Yeah, kind of an interesting thing. So we're actually working with JUB on getting a traffic signal there. We're working with UDOT to get that done. Then we're also working with Desert Color, or UDOT on another one at Desert Color Parkway. That's final design, hoping to go into hoping to bid that out in the next couple of weeks in the construction here in the next, I'd say, hopefully in the next little while. Navin is helping us with that design. Just getting ready to do our chip seal. We've got a lot of roads doing there. I can't remember them all, but it's kind of road maintenance. And then hopefully after our budget kind of gets initially passed, we'll have a few road projects that we're going to be doing. Santa Clara.
We are just finishing up our track sealing and prep to chip seal all of Pioneer Parkway. And today we started a project on Pioneer Parkway from Harmon's to the new light at Red Mountain Drive. That road has had a large hump in it, and so we're removing all of the curb and asphalt, regrading and repaving.
Awesome. Tuckerville.
So Tuckerville, we're just still working on the parkway at this point. Had a few pretty decent setbacks, but we'll have to reroute the Rocky Mountain Power underground that was aerial before because of some slope stabilization issues. The other thing, we should have power to our 2 million gallon tank that was ready to install. It would be nice to get that online in the system. Other than that, just regular development, there will be a permanent traffic light at Tuckerville and then off out of Anderson Junction just off I-15. So,
that's a first for Tuckerville.
Yeah, first. It's like St. George 1952, all over again.
So I'll be good and bad when we get to this period of time after 52.
Transit, I don't think we had anything from transit. You got?
I got it. Just some quick updates. The turn lanes to Quail Lake construction started. Will be done in a couple of months. And then also the turn lanes to the Snow Canyon just above the entrance will be starting soon with construction. And then design work on I-15 and Bluff Street and St. Louis Boulevard is ongoing. So
Snow Canyon was on Highway 18?
Yeah.
Are they going to do that parking area too? Same project?
Yeah.
Okay. Chris, on the I-15 project that's under design, have you heard any up or down on the funding for the grant?
We've been instructed to proceed like we no change in it, and so we're just going to keep moving forward unless we hear different. So.
Okay.
We're assuming we have it and nothing will change, but in this current climate, who knows what will happen.
All right, Virgin, I didn't see much from Virgin. Washington City.
We're 300 East and Telegraph turn pocket, right turn pocket, proceeding well, should be done. I think the project timeline ends on the 20th of this month, but should be done with that. It also includes finishing up that intersection on Telegraph as well as 300 East with medians for a short distance there, just kind of keep, since we've got businesses on either corner and stuff like that, people turning into the do not intersections, we're going to put some medians there. So while we're doing the project, so it should all be done by the 20th, which will be good because we needed an additional right turn lane, just one. We needed one, yeah, actually.
Putting turn lanes really helps.
Yeah.
All right, Washington County, Todd.
I have some projects outside the Enfield boundary, but nothing really inside right now.
That's kind of in the hole for a little bit, I guess.
Our stuff, we're looking at some stuff like Co-op Terrace Road. It's going to be a pretty major project for us, and then we've got some funding for Gunlock Road to widen some shoulders and add some guardrails. Those are the big ones for us.
All right, I guess our next meeting is April 5th for DTAC and then the 18th for DTEC. Do we not have a March DTEC meeting?
This is the March DTEC meeting.
Not DTEC.
DTEC.
I know we get confused with it all the time.
DTEC for March is not. I need to look at my calendar.
I'll have this Greg look into that.
Hey, I work every day because I'm not just saying.
Not sure we'll have a forum.
We'll change that with our minutes from next week, what the correct dates are. Have Myron send those out.
Sorry about that. The March DTEC is on March 18th, not April 18th.
Okay.
And the April 5th one, probably April 3rd.
And the DTAC meeting will be April 2nd.
All right, well, thanks everybody for showing up, and maybe we'll see you tomorrow at our public APWA's ASCE conference. And with that, we will adjourn.
Thank you.
Arthur, there's also a high school.
There's one project now, it's combined into one.
We've got some pictures that.
And it's advertised right now to open the 20th.
So I just.
It's just a slide sticking in there.
Is it from Main Street to Ray Lunch? Or is it Ray Lunch?
I'll look on my plan, but it's advertised right now.
It changed a little bit.
It says Laverne and the.
I thought it was in the bottom and it goes to.